Hello, this is Team CST. I'm Mercedes Lucky, and this is Connecting Spirit Together. And we are here to help people help themselves. And I'm very proud to say that this is our debut show here on BBS Radio. And I am very also proud to say that I have an incredible guest today, tonight actually, and his name is Paul Reeder. And actually, we're located in Tucson, Arizona. Originally, the show, Team CST, was broadcast on a radio program here in Tucson. But now, luckily, we have found a new home at BBS Radio. And I want to let you know that everyone that's listening, this show is actually for you. It is about helping people to help themselves. Because we all know that we go through times when we're sad, we're depressed, we are heartbroken. You know, I've actually gone through all of that myself. It's been a hard few years for me. And the gentleman that I'm going to have on right now has actually been one of the people in my life that I've known in the last year or so that has really helped me to get through a lot of the pain and the sorrow and the self-hatred, unforgiveness, things like that, if you can relate to me, that I have actually experienced, which I know a lot of people experience this. And his name is Paul Reeder, and he's a spiritual astrologer. And I consider him one of my dear friends. And he helped me, like I said, through a time when I was going through abuse and everything else. And through his help, I was able to see from my birth chart, from my birth date and time, this person who had no idea who I was and didn't know me whatsoever looked into my life, into my chart, and saw things about me through my childhood and actually before I was born, and discussed with me what was going on in my life and my life from when I was born until now or till a year ago. And it actually helped me to realize, oh my gosh, you know, like, it is something, what I experienced was meant to be experienced. It wasn't just horrible, you know. And so that's what this show is all about. What I've gone through have been many things. I've gone through many things, and many people have come into my life to help me. And I'm going to bring forth these people so hopefully they can help you get out of the situation by their loving and their caring and their desire to do so. And I just thought of this line just a second ago. It just came to me about, it's kind of like opening a doorway to a new way of thinking, a new way of believing, a new way of being. And with that, I want to introduce you to Paul Reeder. Paul, are you there?
I'm here, Mercedes. How you doing?
I'm wonderful. I went through my nervousness, and now I'm so excited. Are you excited?
Sure, why not?
Okay, Paul, whatever. Then, Paul, I talked a little bit about you, and like I said, I consider Paul to be an incredible teacher, an incredible intuitive person, an astrologer at its best. Paul actually goes on tours, you know, around, and I mean, it's limitless what Paul can do. And Paul, I want you to tell them a little bit about you, if you don't mind doing so. You actually, Paul's my first guest on my last show, which was on the radio program here in Tucson, and he's my first guest on this show, so he brought me good luck before, and I want him to bring me good luck again. So here he is. Tell us a little bit about what you do and what your philosophy is.
Well, thanks, Mercedes. You give me a lot of credit. And
Well, I do. I mean, you deserve it.
But neither here nor there. I mean, what we want to focus on today is really what is the what does it mean to be spiritual, or what is the process of awakening really involve, and part of, you know, the Buddhists will tell us that in every life there is suffering, that suffering is the only thing that's actually inevitable or certain in life. And I think that's a really good place to start. Why is that so? Why should that be so? And
I don't know.
Yeah, well...
Well, because it helps you to, you know, learn. But, Paul, I know you don't want to talk about yourself, but can you please, before we go into all that, can you just tell me, can you tell people about, you know, the... what you do, you know, a little bit about yourself, just a little bit, please.
Sure. Now, I've been practicing astrology since, as my full-time profession since 1984. So, in a few months, it will have been 25 years of full-time astrology practice.
And you totally don't look old enough to be doing this 25 years. You look like, you know, when I think about 25 years, that's a long time you've been practicing astrology, my goodness.
Yeah, I had a really great fortune in so many respects. As a young kid, I was raised by scientific parents,
mm-hmm.
and brilliant parents, and learned to think. Was by example, was taught how to think critically and think through things. And then, remarkably, sort of against, in contrast to my family of origins, nature, at age 12 years, 9 months, in a quiet, alone moment in the Smoky Mountains on a hillside, had a profound spiritual experience.
You had a profound spiritual experience.
Oh, yeah, I went home and told my grandma. I was staying. It was just, I was away from my parents for the summer, working in the stables of a ranch club, and I was, of course, this experience lasted a few hours, and I was late for dinner. My grandma was all concerned, and she asked me what the world was going on, and I told her what had happened, and she said, "My Lord, Paul, you just met Jesus." And I said, no, Grandma, his name's Yeshua.
So you kind of, it just, how old were you, 12?
12 years, 9 months, yeah. And, and so, you know, growing up in the Midwest, what's a boy to do? But I went straight to the Bible, of course, and had a wonderful teacher, a Pastor David Albright, who helped me go through the Bible. And, of course, having had direct experience with the divine, the life principle. I kind of hesitate to use the word God, not so much, but a little bit, just because we have so many images that get conjured up. I rather prefer to say the divine, because it's kind of a really generalizing term, but because I had a direct personal experience, the things that I learned as I was studying the Bible meant, I think, considerably different things to me than it does to the average person reading the Bible, you know, trying to find something.
And I know, because I've been trying to understand the Bible for about a year and a half, and you've actually really helped me in understanding the Bible and God and spirit and the mix of, you know, what is what. So I understand what you're saying.
I mean, we're all God in drag. and so, after a time of 4 years of pretty intense Bible study, so completing my teenage years, I had, I was actually licensed to preach as a lay minister. And,
wow.
And it turned out I was a bit of a zealot. And made some of the congregation a little uncomfortable. And when one of the elders of the church took me aside and pointed that out, the it kind of peeved me.
Yeah, I imagine. Because you know what? But you're different. I mean, you're not really from a strict religion. I mean, are open.
Certainly not. Certainly not. Never, never, ever do I want to advocate any one religion over another. I do strongly advocate the search. And where do we search? Well, we search everywhere. But most importantly, we search within. You know as well as I do that life is inside out. Everything
right.
that looks like it's outside is a projection of our internal energies.
Right.
And everything that's functioning within us is definitely going to manifest in the external circumstances of our lives. And this is true for us as individuals, and it's also true for us collectively.
Right.
You know, yeah. So, anyways, I left the Christian church kind of in a huff. You know,
mm-hmm.
I blamed Jesus. Right? It's his church. He's responsible. Well,
mm-hmm.
In retrospect, I find that kind of comical and silly.
But you're young.
But anyways, it led me to want to study scripture from all cultures. I wanted to try to sift out what was in that scripture because of universal truth, because at some point in time, a gifted seer, a saint or a siddha or whatever, someone through direct perception understood the universal truth and found some way to represent it to the people. And I wanted to be able to sift that out from what was there because of culture, because of climate or geology or collective morality, because of how the different people from all over the world in different cultures develop different moralities, different traditions to handle the same kind of problems, the same kind of challenges of life. And I wanted to be able to separate the what in a religion is there because it's universally true, and what in a religion is there because it meets cultural need.
And kind of like it's all one, right? You know, we're all kind of the same.
Yeah. Yeah. There's the paradox is unity in diversity.
Yeah.
That is that the oneness that you speak of, Mercedes, is not sameness.
No, it's sameness.
Yeah, inherent in nature. And I think I'm hoping that in the course of the time that we spend together here in this session, that we're going to explore this one concept quite a bit more. But inherent in this creation, and most especially the earth, this earth school that we share together, inherent in it is diversity, biodiversity, botanical diversity, and a major part of the strength of life here is rooted in difference. But again, rooted in difference, and yet the differences are not, don't take away from our unity, from our oneness.
Right, our oneness.
Let's go back for a moment.
You know what? You know what I think we should do for a minute before we go back to whatever that place is you want to go back to?
Right, go ahead.
I think we need to give out this number because not only are you here to speak to me and speak to the audience, but we are also here to take in calls from people, and you are very gifted. And what we need to let people know is that the toll-free number here is 877-876-5227. I'm going to give it again, 877-876-5227. And people that are listening, please keep out your pen and paper because Paul, of course, is going to give you his website. I'll give you my website. Much information is going to come to you. If you want to write it down, that would be great. So, again, the number is 877-876-5227. And please call and ask Paul, some questions. And what you need to have is your birth date. It's like your, so he can give you kind of a little thing of your natal chart, which is what he did on me. At the beginning when I first met him, you give your time of birth.
As near as you know.
What your day, where you're born, you know, just as much information as you can. And then Paul can kind of help you. So please do call in. We would love that. That's what we're about. We're about helping people to help themselves. And Paul, when you did my birth chart a year ago or more, maybe, I think it was about this time last year, that's what I was trying to say at the beginning. I was just taken aback about what you knew about my life. And then I saw my life through someone else's something. I saw it through another person's eyes or a different set of eyes. I saw things in my life, and how would you know? But you knew from my chart.
That's what it seemed like to you.
To me, yeah,
that's
because
what it seemed like
how
to
would you.
You
know all the things I struggled through from early infancy until now? I mean, but you knew the boundary, you knew that, and I was just like, wow. That, and I've been actually your student for, I guess, a year now. Kind of your, I mean, I I'm not the best student you have. I try. But, I mean, that's why I'm telling people to call 877-876-5227 because Paul really, really, really helped me. You really did.
Well,
and so let's go back to whatever we were going back to.
That's
I forgot
fine.
Already.
Let's go back. Because the question that we started this before you wanted me to start going off on my bio or whatever.
Was
why do we suffer?
Why do we suffer? Because we want to get to, we have to suffer, right? Because, I mean, I've suffered, but you know what? When I suffered, and now I've come out of this horrible dark tunnel, whatever, and I'm coming into this beautiful new light. I mean, it's just, it's like you, it makes sense why you suffered, because you grow
Right. So let's be clear. It's not like suffering is all there is. You have lived a very rich life that has included, I mean, you have terrific talent, you're a fabulous musician. Like all of our lives, your experience and all of our experiences has included kind of a pendulum swinging back and forth between the opposing duality, the opposites of pain and pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons we suffer is due to the way this pendulum swings back and forth. But to get to a really deeper understanding of why suffering is built into the system, or why it appears to be built into the system, and what we must do, how we must grow in order to transcend that suffering, is, and one of the ways that we can define actually what is the spiritual, what does it mean to be on a spiritual path, or what does it mean to be growing spiritually? And you know, the answer to that question arises from the fact that psychologically, psychically, we're inherently fragmented. We're broken into parts, and our parts don't work together. They don't fit together, and our various motivational forces, creative impulses within our consciousness, within our psyche, are in differing states defined by different attitudes, different beliefs, different behaviors, different psychological resources that don't always work together, that don't coalesce, that don't cooperate, that don't interact nicely. And so our external lives, the lives of our situations, our relationships, our external lives reflect the internal fragmentation, the internal confusion. And our challenge, our opportunity, the opportunity that life gives us is to progressively, little by little, step by step, and it doesn't matter how long it takes, is to make progress towards integration, towards integrity. This is a little different. People talk about integrity, meaning being true to your word, and of course that is a part of it. But integrity from a spiritual standpoint amounts to taking the fragmented, the broken shards of our being and cultivating psychological resources, attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors that allow all the parts of us to work together as a singularity, as a cohesive piece. And again, this is true in our individual lives, and it's also true in our collective life, in our life as a society. We must find a way to honor all of our differences without sacrificing our unity. And so unity and diversity is an essential spiritual value that we want to cultivate. Yeah.
It's kind of like a, what is it, yin and yang? It's like opposite, you know, it kind of reflects positive and negative.
Before we are born.
Right.
Not just on the physical level, not just into the physical body as a human, but before we are born as an individualized focus of consciousness, of an individualized vortex of vibration, before we're separated, we're one. We're just simply part of the ocean of being, of the great source.
Right.
We're not differentiated from it at all. And then at some point, we emerge, just like a drop of water from the ocean, we emerge as a differentiated being, and our evolutionary process begins. And in order for that emergence to take place, our oneness has to be split into two-ness. And the two-ness...
What does that mean?
Well,
what does that mean?
You've used the words yin and yang just now.
Okay.
I want to offer two other words to describe the two halves of our being. Astrologically, they're the luminaries.
What?
The luminaries, the sun and the moon.
Okay.
Right? The sun is 92 plus million miles away, and the moon is 230,000 miles away. The sun is huge, the moon is tiny, and yet they're exactly positioned so that their disk appears to be the same size to our eyes.
Oh, wow.
Oh, it's such a beautiful dance our solar system goes through, and this means a little bit different thing to me than a fundamentalist when they say it, but I think it's indicative of intelligent design.
Yeah.
Of our being. But these two halves that our oneness are divided into, I think we're going to use the words spirit and soul.
Wow. And I just love your excitedness about that.
Yeah,
I love your excitement.
Astrologically, the sun represents the spirit, and the moon represents the soul. And these represent the two halves of our eternal being. The soul is that half of our eternal being that connects us in the present moment to our past. And the sun, the spirit, is that half of our eternal being that connects us in the present moment to our future. And one of the ways that the ancient alchemists described the journey, the spiritual journey, the journey towards awakening, towards enlightenment, towards liberation from the suffering inherent in karma, is the marriage of the sun and the moon, taking these two halves of being, not my being, not your being, the whole idea of there being a possessive pronoun in front of us creates part of the illusion that creates suffering, because it reminds us that conditions our consciousness to experience ourselves as separate. But the two halves of being, we want to bring them back together within ourselves, within our individuality.
Depression and suffering that we have to go through brings us to harmony.
Well, it certainly gives us the opportunity. The suffering is a context in which progress must be made. You know, when we are in that undifferentiated state of oneness, when we're just being a part of the whole, it's a perfect experience of connectedness.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings up a value that we have romanticized. Not that romanticizing it is a great help, but we've romanticized as under the word love.
Right.
Under the word love, and as we distinguish ourselves or separate ourselves from that, you know, great ocean, if you will, ocean of being. That separateness leads to feelings of loneliness, of aloneness, and from that aloneness, feelings of fear, and it's those feelings of aloneness and separateness, fearfulness, that create the context in which our being develops. It's sort of like a crucible.
Right, because I remember when I first met you, that was exactly what I was going through, fear, you know, the whole thing. I remember crying all the time. I remember talking with you. But it was fear and loneliness, being alone, having, you know, and that through that and having you as my guide and teacher, it was able to help me through to the fact that teaching me to look for another alternative, you know, look more to the higher power in myself and what oneness with myself, which helped me to not be lonely anymore, not be fearful. So, yeah, I understand.
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty cool. So
that's sort of the universal, the thing. The paradox is that we continue to be individual being.
Right.
Individuating being. But progressively we cultivate a sense of identity that is rooted in the connectedness. So when we feel separate, and by the way, that feeling of separateness that we feel from the whole of everybody else, a gap that we have to bridge somehow, that's exactly the thing that's going on within us, being experienced and expressed by the various fragments of our being inside of us. Inside of us, each little part of us has its own little ego, its own little sense of identity.
Yeah, that's why I never understood when you used to say that about fragments and prisms and things, and it took me a while to kind of understand what you were talking about.
If
you
were going to get all psychological about it, we'd call them complexes. Yeah, right? A complex is a group of creative impulses that have coalesced together, that have actually, in fact, learned how to work together, and then exist within us as a unit that can be separate from some of the other creative impulses that have together created various complexes. And when we're looking at our astrology charts, we find symbolic representations. Each of the planets represents definite layers within the psyche that are operating. You know, specific needs and urge. The sun, the urge to grow, to become, to develop potential into definite character. The moon, the need for familiarity and security, and the whole array of habits and automatic pilot, automatic reactions and responses to the things that happen around us. So that we can try to maintain a sense of familiarity and security. Mercury, the need for information and skill, the need to be able to manage, to manipulate, to you know, to run our show through action. Venus, the desire for pleasure, the sense, the aesthetic values that are around which we experience pleasure and beauty, and by the way, experiencing pleasure and beauty, wanting to share it. Venus, the capacity, the need, the hunger for companionship, for intimacy, for friendship, for love. We romanticize it as love. Mars, the need to, again, distinguish ourselves as individuals, protect our bodies, promote our personal interests. And those five planets represent the complex of individuality, and Jupiter and Saturn together representing the functions within our individuality that connect us to our group, to not just to our family group, of course that's handled by the first five planets, but to our neighborhoods or our communities, our cities, or the groups within the community that we're a part of. Jupiter, the force of exploration, of adventure, the curiosity, the hunger for not just information, but knowledge, understanding, and wisdom. And Saturn, the need to survive, to survive the material plane, to manage the material plane, to master the material requirements of life. So in this society, it turns out to be money and reputation and position and influence. Humanity, human beings, are tribal.
Mm-hmm.
And so even at a deep physiological level and psychological level, our sense of survival depends upon being able to play nice with others, to work well, to cooperate, to do something of value, you know, to make a contribution to the tribe, so the tribe will contribute what we need back to us, you know, so we can all work together. I mean, we all live in homes built by somebody else, and eat food grown by somebody else, and wear clothing made by somebody else. And in order to have that right, we must make a contribution. You know, so Saturn, Jupiter and Saturn representing these two principles. The one, opportunity giving, Jupiter providing a sense of adventure, and we kind of like Jupiter. It has a shadowy side too, but we kind of, even when it's taken us to hell, we kind of enjoy the journey. You know, Jupiter, the great benefic, we call it. And Saturn, you know, is kind of universally considered the bad guy. It's the taskmaster, duty and responsibility and more, you know, right and wrong and all that. But ultimately, if we can cultivate a good relationship with the Saturn archetype, life goes a lot better. Oh, my heavens. You know, yeah, we can pay our bills and stuff. And then, and this is part of what gets exciting, you know, if nobody calls in and wants their individual chart stuff done, that's fine, because we have some material that we can speak about what's going on in the collective around us right now. And everybody knows, it's, you know, if you got your eyes and ears open, if you're paying attention at all, that these are interesting and exciting times.
They are.
That we're living in. And
you know what? Wait a minute, Paul. I was just about to say we're at the half point of this show. And so I want to go ahead and give out that number again, just in case anyone wants to speak to us or speak to you. The number is 877. This is toll free. 877-876-5227. That is 877-876-5227. And also to let you know that right after this show, we've got Between Two Worlds. That's Between Two Worlds with Derek White's Cloud. That sounds pretty interesting, doesn't it, Paul?
Yeah, it does, huh?
But well, I know we discussed this. We want to talk about, and by the way, I just love your energy. I love your excitedness, and that's why I take class with you. Can you please give us your email? Can you please give us your phone number?
First of all, my website is paulreeder.com. That's PAULREEDER.com. Careful in the spelling of Reeder. It's not an assumed name. It's my family name. It's REEDER, paulreeder.com. Yeah. I've had people call me up, and I used to use my whole name, Paul Marshall Reeder. You know, people call me up and say, may I speak to Mr. Marshall? You know, and I say, well, how about me, you know, because I'm Mr. Reeder. And, you know, because it's my father's name and his father's name, and so I'm happy that way. And my email address is paul@paulreeder.com. So, yes, feel free to peruse my website. In the process of reiterating it, I don't know how long it'll take, another month probably, to get the new site up. But lots more interesting information will be available soon there. But as it is, it's pretty good, actually, even so.
I think so. And I know you're like my one and only MySpace friend. Because I have my MySpace at Mercedes Lucky, that's MERCEDEZLUCKY, and Paul's like my only friend right now, so I'd like some more friends.
MySpace, yeah.
I know, that's funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
But you know what, we are going to talk, now that we got your information, we're going to say it again for those who need pen and paper after this show. We're going to say that again before the end of the program. And we're now all going to discuss what's happening in 2009. What do you think?
Of course we're going to discuss that, but...
Okay,
we're going to finish talking about where we were at before, because part of what...
Okay, what we're
really
on before.
Really exciting about the era that we're living in.
Yeah.
So far we talked about Sun, Moon, Mercury, Venus, and Mars, the personal planets, and Jupiter and Saturn, the chronocrators, or the society, the planets of society, the social planets, the planets that represent functions within our psyche that connect us to the collective and have us interacting with the collective.
Did we discuss the triple, triple?
We're going to get to that.
Okay.
You know, God willing, we'll get to that. If not, have me on another time. We've been collectively studying these seven planets, Sun, Moon, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn, for more than 10,000 years. There are archaeological evidences from every culture that show that we've been watching, and why not? Because we can see all them with our naked eye. But within the last few hundred years, exactly timed with an obvious acceleration of cultural evolution, has come the discovery of what we're now going to call the transcendental planets.
Okay.
And the first transcendental planet was discovered in 1781. That's the planet Uranus. And 1781, French and American Revolution, the Industrial Revolution, the beginning of the age of technology, really, of high technology, of complex machinery. So Uranus is the planet of invention and the planet of innovation, of experimentation. And by the way, the planet that represents the development of one's uniqueness, one's nonconformity. And here we have these political revolutions at this time. They haven't really quite worked out. But nonetheless, putting forth the idea of individual sovereignty, that is, individuals, you and I and everybody else, get to be in charge of our own trips. And,
you mean that's like right now going on?
Pardon me?
It means that like now going on, what you're saying?
I know. You want me to get there, and I'll get there.
No. It's okay. I was kind of lost.
One of the very important things we're going to look at is the series of Saturn-Uranus oppositions. The first one was November 18th. We're going to get to that, I promise.
Okay, that's cool.
Neptune was discovered in 1846. That was the next of the transcendental planets discovered, 1846. And just right around the time of the Civil War.
You know, it's amazing they found that. I mean, how did they find that? I mean, like,
well, the way they found them was by noticing perturbations, variances in the orbital periods of the inner planets. Uranus was found because Saturn had a little kink in its giddy up. It went through a little variance in its normal orbital period. And this really astute astronomer named Herschel did some math on it, and he figured out there has to be a gravitational body on the outside there. And this was just as they were beginning to grind lenses. Was a little ways into it, but they were grinding lenses, so he had a telescope, and he pointed it in the direction where his math told him there should be a gravitational force. And guess what? He found Uranus there.
Wow, that's cool.
And in the same way, because of Uranus's wacky stuff, Neptune was discovered, and then Pluto was discovered. The story of Pluto's discovery is fantastic. Here in Arizona, up in Flagstaff, by the way, there was this wonderful astronomer whose name is Percival Lowell, and he did all these wacky studies of Mars, where he talked about the canals, and, you know, there must have been life there, and he kind of inspired, this was in the latter part of the 19th century, kind of inspired some of the science fiction, early science fiction about Mars. But by 1917, he had worked out the mathematics of Pluto's position and orbital period. And then he croaked in 1918, bless his heart. The irony here is that, among other things, Pluto is a planet of death and rebirth. You know, Pluto rules the under. His other name is Hades, right?
Isn't that Scorpio thing, Pluto?
It very much has a symbolic affinity with the sign Scorpio. The symbolism, the archetype of Pluto, definitely connected to the symbolism of Scorpio. Absolutely. Some people like to call it the ruler of Scorpio. I'm really more of a fan of the traditional rulerships. So I think that Mars is the night ruler of Scorpio. Transcendental planets are transcendent. They transcend duality, and sign symbolism exists within the context of duality. So anyways, I'm still really a fan of the ancient rulerships. But that's kind of technical stuff, and I don't want to get bogged down there. But the point is, it took until 1930 for Clyde Tombaugh, Lowell's closest student and some of his sons, to work out the funds and build the telescope where Pluto was discovered. And part of what Pluto deals with is power and the evolution of power. And oh my God, we could do a whole show just on that one subject because it's so loaded. But, it deals with those four stages of power.
Yeah.
And depending upon what kind of language we want to use to describe those four stages of power, in terms of the roles we play, victim, submissive, dominant, and power sharing.
Heck yeah, I know that.
Lose, win, win, lose, win, win. There's only one of the four ways that we can have a power exchange.
It's win-win.
That'll produce satisfying, lasting results. Right, win-win, exactly.
Because I remember that in class.
Yeah, and the other three are far more common. It's, you're going to see a lot more evidence of people abusing power, of needing to have power over. And again, that's an extension of the fragmented nature of our being, the fearful state that we operate in. We have to have control because we lack faith. We don't have trust. In order for us to, you know, if we operate by ourselves, if we forget the whole power thing, if we stay at the Mars level, using our strength, we take actions. Actions change things.
Mm-hmm.
And all we have to do is figure out how to, you know, how the world responds to our actions. Eventually, we can produce the changes we want, the changes we intend.
Hey, Paul.
What?
Okay, so like when you met me, and you know how depressed I was and how upset I was, you gave me some really great advice or some insight to exactly what you're saying right now. Can you help others right now? Can you kind of say something that might help people that are going through kind of what, you know, maybe they need, maybe they are in a power struggle right now. Maybe they are being submissed, you know, like being hurt by somebody.
Well,
what do you do?
We all start out as victims because we're little. Feet won't carry us. Our hands won't hold what we love. Our words are not yet persuasive. And everybody around us is bigger and stronger and knows more, has more experience. So we all start out as victims. And as early as we possibly can, this is just natural. As early as we possibly can, we cultivate the attitudes, the beliefs, and behaviors, the psychological resources needed to be submissive. Because
like a baby.
By being submissive, we avoid the pain inherent in being a victim. And while being submissive, we're interacting with somebody who's displaying to us, modeling for us, the attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors of dominance. And we're taking notes.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know it's not going to be that long. Somebody smaller than us is going to come around. And the sad truth about the average person's power management, the development of character, of psychological resources we use in power exchanges, is such that we go from victim to submissive to dominating roles in every power exchange that we have, which role we play being decided by whether the person we're interacting with is bigger and stronger or smaller and weaker. And we do,
this
in spite of the fact that there's no joy in it.
No joy, yeah.
There's no satisfaction in it, no real joy in it. And then someday, by grace, someone enters our life who just simply won't play that game. Who knows that the only way to produce a satisfying result in a power exchange is in a win-win, in a power sharing, in an exchange. But even though one may be stronger and the other weaker, one may have more money, one may have less money, we can treat one another as peers.
How do we find that? I mean, like, I feel so lucky to have found people in my life, but I know there are so many people out there that are, you know, I mean, still suffering. And is it just God that finds those for us, or how do we reach out for that, Paul? How do we reach out for that person that's going to show us that little bit of hope? Is it in our charts? Is it in our life view, or what? Are we just lucky?
Yeah, you are, aren't you? Mercedes.
I am. Well, I am lucky. My name's Lucky, yeah.
But
I consider myself very lucky.
It has to do with our karma, doesn't it?
I think so. I know I had a lot of karma.
And everything does, so that's kind of a no-brainer. All of life is karmic. The law of karma is that we're constantly sowing seeds. Our consciousness is the seed that we're planting every moment. Our consciousness, which is made out of desire, conceptualization, physicality, physical action, and sentimental sensitivity that helps us to choose what we're connecting with and who we're connecting with. But every moment of our life, the whole spectrum of our consciousness, without any exception, there's no part of our conscious being, our consciousness, because some of our consciousness is not very conscious sometimes, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the entire spectrum of our energy field, our aura, is a seed being planted in the fields of consciousness that permeate and surround the earth. And that seed takes root there, and over time grows, vegetates, flowers, and fruits. and the fruit are in the situations and circumstances. So every moment of time, we're in some situation or circumstance that is the result of our past.
Right.
That is a result of karmic seeds set into motion in the past. And the answer to the question is we meet somebody who can help us cultivate the attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors of power sharing because our karma makes it possible.
Right.
And so you say, how can we make that happen? Well, the one thing you can do every moment is set into motion karmic seeds that will eventually, maybe after the karmas that were already set into motion in the past that you can't undo because you can't go backwards in time, maybe after they've exhausted, if we are in a situation or circumstance where we're suffering abuse, it's because, you know, we have set into motion things that make that necessary, make it natural, the natural result. But whatever we set into motion in the past, like everything else, is only temporary. And so what we can do is, even in the face of being abused, set into motion the karmas of power sharing. You know, the relationship, one of the differences between a relationship of power sharing between peers is the notion of dignity. And mutual respect. When we treat one another with dignity, when we contribute to one another's resources, rather than tearing down each other's resources or tearing down each other's dignity, then we're actually setting into motion the things that lead to our own. But you know, the other part of it, in the word that I said a moment ago, it has to do with grace.
Grace
brings things. When things come into our lives that come from a higher level of consciousness than we have any historic association with, that's grace. Grace brings that along. You know, thanks to God, I guess you could say. That's just fine. As long as you're, again, willing to accept the fact that
higher power.
Divine is nothing more than your own whole being, your own wholeness. Everybody, it's not, and again, the English language kind of sabotages our understanding here because of all these possessive pronouns. It makes it feel like, you know, again, we're separate or separated, like we can own it or something like that. We can't really own it. It's just amazing. It's not really easy for English.
Your words about dignity really ring true to me, because I remember when you telling me that a year ago about dignity and about people respecting you and giving you the boundaries, giving you respect and loving you, and don't, you know, and why allow somebody that's going to treat you badly into your circle, into your space? I mean, we deserve dignity. That is what God and higher power, whatever, spirit, whatever you want to call it, that's what we deserve, right? I mean, I remember those words that you said to me a year ago.
Yeah.
I do.
Of course, I wouldn't necessarily say anything about deserving. Because,
deserving,
again, I'm not so sure deserving, right, like it's something we earn. No, it's something inherent. It's something built into this, to the system. But the one of the essentials, you see, as long as we operate on our individual strength, all we have to pay for is our own mistakes.
Right.
But when we combine our strengths together in that way that produces power, that produces that multiplication of creative force in terms of what's changing reality and changing our character, when we engage in a power exchange,
mm-hmm.
The ability, you know, we not only have to pay for our own mistakes, we have to pay for each other's mistakes. Everybody involved in any power exchange, lose, 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 win, win, loser, win, win, everybody involved is in a vulnerable relationship to everybody else involved. And the quality, the capacity for us to produce satisfying results in our power exchange with other people will always be in proportion to our trust. To our capacity to trust each other, and in proportion to our worthiness of each other's trust,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so when we have a history that includes the abuse of trust. Oftentimes we have a really hard time knowing, being able to decide, can I trust you or not? You know,
right.
Who to trust,
yeah.
Who not to trust.
And then you basically you kind of know inside. I mean, your being tells you. I mean, you get those gut feelings. Everyone does.
There's an intuitive understanding that you're talking
right.
about. Yeah.
Yes.
But many of us are conditioned by our upbringing to ignore our intuition.
Mm-hmm.
That's irrational. Right? And so it's really common for us to ignore our intuition. So again, we find ourselves in this quandary where we don't know who to trust. We don't know how to decide who to trust and who not to trust. And mm-hmm. it's not a good idea to just trust everybody universally. It's bad business. You know,
right.
you get ripped off.
That's, you know, that's a totally cool subject because, I mean, I think now that in this last year I've really gained intuitive abilities extremely, and so I can go through my insight, and I believe that every human being in this world does, but we don't realize it because through this century or this 100 years, it has gone, you know, like where we don't trust that inability, don't you think? The intuitiveness that is really in our nature?
Yeah. When we want to learn how to trust skillfully, when we want to learn how to decide who to trust and who not to trust, and we want to do this skillfully, the first step is to manage our boundaries.
Yes, manage our boundaries.
Because a lot of we can't decide who to trust and who not to trust because we freaking can't trust ourselves. We have a history that shows that, you know, we don't know what our boundaries are.
Right.
We have no concept of sacred space.
Right.
We have no understanding that when somebody's presence is within a certain zone of closeness to us, and that closeness may be physical or emotional or psychological or spiritual, but when a person is within a certain zone of our being, we can't disregard them. We can't ignore them. And the first rule of boundary management is nobody belongs inside our sacred space, except by invitation.
Right.
And so the first, you know, rule or skill of boundary management has to be able to say, you know what, I didn't invite you in here. Get out. Give me some space.
Strong enough to say that. I mean, you have to be strong enough inside yourself to be able to do that.
You must do this. You must do this because nobody can guard your boundaries but you.
Right. And that's what this thing is. That's why you're here, Paul, because it's like you help me to help myself know that.
Yeah. Well, and then the second rule of boundary management is even the people that you have invited in
mm-hmm.
have a duty and responsibility. Too often it's unspoken. We need to speak openly about this, but have a duty to be kind and gentle and respectful and to contribute to our dignity and our resources while inside our sacred space.
Right,
if somebody behaves inside your sacred space in a way that doesn't do that, that tears down your dignity or your self-respect, then you have to have the strength to say, you know what, I don't play this game. Get out.
Yeah, right. You help me do that. You help me do that.
When a person has developed a history of boundary management, mm-hmm. then deciding who to trust and who not to trust comes a little easier.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, you give me credit.
Why not? Yeah.
The fact is that you've done these things for yourself.
I have people like yourself, a few other people, and you really helped me. I mean, you really did.
I think it's a general, kind of a universal truth, Mercedes, that one of the most important factors in our growth and development is our associates, the company we keep,
mm-hmm.
The company we keep. A very important distinction that we might want to make here, because we've been talking about power issues from the standpoint of win-win, with the knowing that whichever kind of power exchange we have is the direct result of the psychological resources, the skill sets we entered into the power exchange with. So I think it's useful to distinguish why is a winner and why is a loser.
You know what, Paul? We have 5 minutes left.
I know. We're not going to get to any of the notes I took.
I know. But I love this conversation.
Yeah,
but
I know. It's sacred. It's gone the way it's gone for whatever the divine reason. But what makes a loser a loser?
Yeah, what?
Is the tendency to blame other people or blame situations and circumstances for the experiences we have. And what makes a winner is the ability to take responsibility for whatever happens, whatever we experience. If you haul off and slap me upside the face, I immediately want to ask myself, why did you put your face where her hand would be traveling? There's always a way to take responsibility for everything that happens in our lives, even the things that appear to be perpetrated upon us by others, by owning the decision to associate,
right,
to be associated with a particular person. So choose your associates wisely. If you want, it's like baking a cake. You got to use the right ingredients in the right proportion. If you use a cup of salt and a pinch of sugar, you're going to make a cake nobody wants to eat. If you want a win-win power exchange, then the two things that have to happen is, one, you have to be a winner. You have to be somebody who takes responsibility for whatever happens. No blame.
No blame.
And the other thing you have to do is you have to choose another winner to interact with.
Right.
You have to choose somebody who's willing to take responsibility for whatever his or her experience is. And when you've got that formula together, then you're going to produce a win-win exchange.
So basically surround yourself with people that treat you with dignity. And yeah, that's what I did. After I met you, I learned, not just with you, but from some other people, but to leave the group that I was with that were not good for me, and I mean, in whatever way it was personal to me,
right,
and put myself involved with people that were building me up and that gave me dignity and integrity. So,
and the way to find those people is to treat people that way.
Yes.
And you'll find that the people who are unable to treat you with dignity are equally unable to receive the dignity you have to offer them.
Right, something. You know,
and I'm not talking about ego stroking here. I'm really not. We're not talking about just plumping up the false, separate sense of being. That's not
all. I think people probably, after they've heard you speak, I think they probably realize the truth within your voice. We have probably 2.5 minutes left. Paul, could you please give us your website and phone number again so they can hear that?
Okay, so my website is paulreeder.com. That's paulreeder.com.
Okay.
And my telephone contact number is 520, area code 520-903-2913. That's 520-903-2913. I'm available for personal consultation, and I do speaking engagements on astrology for groups of people that are interested in the spiritual dimensions of astrology. How can we use astrology to understand our consciousness and its development, the process of developing it? How can we use astrology to promote our journey towards self-mastery and real happiness, real joyous, you know, fullness of joy in life?
And I think you've helped me on that journey. I call my own journey the road to the magic kingdom. I know we probably have 60 seconds left, but I think you helped me, Mercedes Lucky, on the road to the Magic Kingdom, because that's why Team CST was developed, and this connecting spirit together. And I know that Paul Reeder, who we are speaking with right now, has helped me to make this radio show possible. And Paul, I just want to thank you again, and I just tell you I love you very much, and thank you for helping me out of the darkness, and I hope that people call you and come to you. And I know if they look on bbsradio.com, they can the Don, who runs the radio station, actually put this beautiful bio together on me. If you look at 7 p.m. And if you go to MySpace, which it has all that my information, you will find Paul Reeder is my friend, and you can easily access him from MySpace, from Mercedes Lucky. And Paul. I just want to thank you so much.
Well, you're welcome.
Thank
it's
you.
Been a hoot. We'll have to do it again, and then the next time talk about actually the year's transits or something.
Okay, no, we'll have to do it again really quick.
So much for
all right. Well, thank
we'll
you, Paul. Awesome. Thank you, and I love you. Goodbye, and thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you.
I know.
Good night.